Welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and I'm joined today by Jess and Karen. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
And tonight we're going to talk about Welcome to Storybrooke, which is the episode that just finished airing. It was a really cool episode. What did you guys think about your initial reactions to the episode? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Was it just so-so? Jess, what did you think?
I liked it. I mean, it wasn't like my favorite episode ever, but I thought that it was really cool to see what happened when the curse first came, and we got some really cool like backstory into Regina's motives and stuff, and a bit more of like where this whole idea to get Henry kind of came from. So I thought in that regard, it was really cool. There were some things that I didn't love, but we'll get into those later.
Karen, what about you?
The episode was all right. Nothing spectacular. I actually didn't really enjoy the Storybrooke flashbacks all that much because, I don't know, Regina just seemed weird to me. I don't know. But I was more interested in finding out what Snow was like and, you know, how Regina wanted to get vengeance on her and that sort of thing. And that felt like such a small part of the episode. We really didn't get a whole lot of any interaction actually between the two of them until the very end, and that's kind of what I was looking for. So it was a good episode, but definitely not one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has its kind of highs and lows. Like, I did enjoy some of the flashbacks. I enjoyed the idea behind Regina wanting a child and kind of us getting to see why that came about and how it came about. I thought that was really cool. What I really didn't like was this mopey, zombie-like Snow White. I didn't get it. Like, it just seemed a little excessive after a while. Yeah. I kind of wanted to kick her.
Is my biggest complaint with this episode, is Snow. She was driving me crazy.
Yeah, I don't do mopey well, and it was excessive. So, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So let's start off with the campers in the woods. We have Owen and Kurt Flynn, and they're the campers, and they're camping right on the edge of where Storybrooke is, as the curse rolls in. And for some reason, because they were camping right on the edge, they can wander into Storybrooke after it is established, which isn't supposed to be able to happen. It's kind of supposed to be protected from what we gather. So what did you guys think about introducing, you know, regular humans not from the fairy tale world into Storybrooke on that very first week? How do you think that played out?
I was kind of confused at first because I thought I was watching the wrong show. It's like these two guys were just camping and, well, you know, a guy and his kid. And I was like, wait, is this the right thing? Then the big purple smoke monster came in. So I knew I was watching the right thing, but I thought it was kind of cool. I'm always interested in seeing how regular people interact with, you know, all these fairy tale people and not knowing who they are and all of those guys having to pretend that they're just normal when they're obviously not. They don't really know a whole lot about the outside world. So I thought it was really interesting just seeing them, you know, kind of walking around town and Regina being all like, you know, who are you and get out of here. And that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Like, it was a neat twist, and it makes sense because it seems very bizarre that Regina would do this curse and this whole town would come in and there wouldn't be a single human soul around that area when it happened, you know, like, so it made sense for something, for there to be a little snafu in the perfect plan.
Yeah, I think it was good for Regina in a sense as well. Like, she needs to understand that not everything is always going to be exactly the way she wanted it to be. And so it was good to kind of get that out of the way up front, I think, for her in a way. And of course, because of Owen, we see Regina making connections to this little boy. And kind of almost he's like the reason why, I think, she wanted Henry, or she needed Henry. Because she didn't really have anything else to connect to in Storybrooke, because everything was exactly as she had planned it, and nothing ever kind of really changed. So she was the only one who really knew everything going on, and I think that made it really hard for her, and she had no one to share anything with. So hence the reason she wanted a child, she wanted Henry. I mean, really, she wanted to keep Owen, in a sense, but...
Did anyone else think that it was strange that she wanted a child? I just found that was so out of character for her, because basically, you know, we never really saw her wanting a child before. And, I mean, technically she is the mother of Snow White, and she hated Snow White, obviously not, you know, because she was a kid. She doesn't necessarily have anything against kids, but it seemed so strange to me. And I definitely understand why she wanted somebody who, you know, she could talk to and who would love her and that sort of thing, but, you know, why not, you know, try to find her true love, a new true love or something like that? Why did she settle so much on having a child?
Yeah, there was a lot about this that I thought was really interesting and kind of bizarre. I think that there were a lot of layers to this. Like, first, that she was expecting to be so happy, you know, and she goes to see Gold and she's like, I was supposed to be happy. Why am I not happy? And he, of course, has no idea what she's talking about at this point in time. And, you know, she didn't realize, because it is like everybody there is just an automaton. And it's just this, like, thing that's day in, day out, like, no difference, no interaction. And, like, she doesn't, like, people are, it's not even the same kind of fear that people have towards her. It's more like a healthy respect as opposed to, like, this power that she wields, and it's just different and not what she thought it was going to be. And she, like, these people that weren't a part of the curse and weren't part of Storybrooke who come in and interact, they give her genuine reactions. Like, they are actually reacting to the things that she's doing in a genuine way. And then for the little boy to give her, for Owen to give her, like, that whatever it was he gave her as a thank you for letting him sit in her seat, it was just, like, the first time that she had had something real happen to her since the curse. And for whatever reason, she just, you know, latched on to it, like, oh, this is what I need, this is what I need. Because she's been seeking so desperately ever since Daniel was killed for something to fill the void in her heart. The thing that I thought was weird, though, and I guess it's not that weird because it is more of an obsessive need that she wants as opposed to actually wanting to love a child. It's just this obsessive, like, need to feel wanted. So it does make sense with the fact that, like, you know, because we talked about before with Henry how she had the hole in her heart, so she never really seemed to love him until after she made that choice to choose him over magic. But, yeah, so it was really, like, it just added so much depth to her character, I thought.
Well, I think part of the reason she craved something different in a child or someone that could she could interact with outside of the people she brought with her is because did anyone else notice it was very much like Groundhog's Day in Storybrooke? I was like,
it was so bizarre.
What am I watching right now? Really, every day you're going to run into Mary Margaret? Every day? Come on now. So I just thought that was a really interesting way to look at how Storybrooke was because it was just like on repeat every single day. And you could tell from, like, day one when Regina giddily brought Mary Margaret in to see David and was like, well, do you know this man? And Mary Margaret's like, oh, no, you know, I hope he finds love and all this other stuff. And only to have, you know, Regina be ecstatic that knowing who they are and not having them connect in any way or show any recognition. So I think that kind of grew old really quick because not only could she do that every day, and yeah, that was great, but she didn't have anyone to share it with. It's not like your evil plot is in motion and you can go home and gloat about it to somebody, because nobody understands. Nobody gets it. She's the only one who knows. Mm-hmm. I mean, not even Gold knows. So I think that was part of the reason why she wanted Owen, or wanted a child, and then ended up wanting a child, was because, A, she needs that love. She needs to feel a connection to someone, and she hasn't done that in so long. And B, it was just having someone to listen to her who could understand outside of the bubble that they created for themselves. Outside of the fact that they're not who they say that, you know what I mean? That these characters are really different people. She needed somebody to share her life with that was real and not some other version of themselves. Which is right. Basically what everyone in Storybrooke is, except her. So I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, living a Groundhog's Day's existence and being the only one knowing what's going on has got to be painful if you think about it.
And that's something that really confused me. And I've wondered about ever since we found out about, like, the time lapse, that there's 28 years that passes but nobody ages and all that kind of stuff. Because when she does eventually bring Henry into the mix 17, 18 years later, he's real. He knows that there's different actions. He goes to school every day. Like, how does that work? Do his classmates not go to the next grade level with him? Like, I don't understand how that works, because he is a real child from outside of Storybrooke who enters in and grows older.
Yeah, I don't know. And that, I guess that part is confusing to me, because we have that, you know, this is what we've known and grown to know. Even in the first season when they were in Storybrooke, not everything was the same. Even before Emma came and kind of woke everything up, it wasn't like everything was on repeat. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know if over time things evolved and everything became more relaxed.
Well, and do one of you remember the lesson that Snow was giving with the bird? Isn't that the same thing that we saw her do the first time we saw her as teacher in Storybrooke?
We have seen her with the bird before, yes.
Yeah, so even that felt like a repeat.
Right, but I don't know how that works with Henry. If he just came to accept it, and again, every day felt like a new day, even though it was the same repetitive thing. But he does grow older, so, like, again, I don't know. That's one of those puzzling things that kind of comes into play, and you're like, well, wait a minute. Is this a plot hole? Is this something I'm missing? Is it, you know, it's one of those things that I don't quite know how to explain, that I don't have a reasoning for, so I don't know. So we also see Regina, we saw her testing out the powers of the curse by, like, going and showing Snow to Charming, like I said, and a couple other things that she, you know, she goes and talks to Gold, even though he doesn't understand her. You know, she does all those things to make sure the curse is solidly in place and it is what it's supposed to be. Then we see her quite a bit with Graham and kind of utilizing Graham as her lover frequently. Like, every day is Groundhog's Day and you get to have the huntsman in your bed. She kind of got a good deal right there. Sign me up.
Right, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. That part of Groundhog's Day, yes, I am in. anyway. I digress. So you don't know where Graham fits in at first, because did it seem like he kind of knew what was going on a little bit? Was anyone else confused by him? Because at first it kind of felt like he knew what was going on, and then, like, later you clearly knew he didn't know. But there was a moment where it felt like he knew exactly what was going on in Storybrooke, or to some extent he knew that things weren't as they should be.
I didn't really think that he knew what was going on. To me, it honestly and truly felt like he was under Regina's spell, and no matter what she said to him, like, he would react without question, like, okay. Like more that he wasn't, like, he didn't have a brain, almost.
Yeah, that makes sense to you. I did get that vibe. I forget the exact moment. There was something about it that made me think, well, does he know more than anyone else? Because it feels like he does, but I could have just misread that. So while we're talking about the huntsman, let's talk about the moment where Regina takes the huntsman's heart out and speaks to it, and he does whatever she wants him to do. Have we seen that happen before?
With Sleeping Beauty in Fairy Tale World.
Oh, that's right. But she spoke to the heart, and she repeated the words.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, she, like, had her do whatever she wanted her to do.
So basically, if they have your heart, you're like a puppet.
Yep.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that, because I thought that was a really creeptastic moment for Regina. And then, of course, we see Regina bonding with Owen kind of over the course of that week. And then we see she's angry, and of course she's Regina, so she can't... This is the thing about Regina. She can't really kind of take no graciously as an answer. If someone tells her no, she's going to find a way to make them say yes. Or she's going to find a way to get what she wants. So instead of just accepting the no, we're going to leave, and maybe, you know, figure out a different way to keep them, Regina just kind of goes, okay, that's fine, and whips out Graham's heart and says, Graham, you're going to arrest him for drunk driving. And then this is Regina's way to keep Owen and to keep him in town. Unfortunately for Regina, Owen's father catches her talking to the heart.
Which, I loved that part, because Graham comes in and he was like, I'm arresting you for drunk driving. The guy's just standing there in her office, like, You know, but it goes to show you how much control Regina has over somebody when she has their hearts like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, truly, because he wasn't even, like, cognizant of the fact that there was no car involved, that they were in an office, that the man had done nothing, you know? So I think that's really kind of creepy and brings Regina's power, or the power of the heart, to a whole nother level. So the other thing we see is that Owen's father tells him to run and to leave and to hide. And so he does run, though Regina catches him, and in the end, Regina does let him go. And so when he goes and gets the police and comes back. And when he comes back, he can't find Storybrooke again. And what we can see is the invisible divide and Regina standing right on the other side looking back at him, even though Owen cannot see what's going on and, you know, can't get back to Storybrooke and the police can't find him. At the end of kind of the episode, even though I know we're kind of skipping around because we haven't talked about anything in real-time Storybrooke, this is just the past, we have Owen who's outside the border of Storybrooke and Owen's father who is inside Storybrooke. And the best of our knowledge is still inside Storybrooke. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, we have no idea what happened to him. One thing I'm really curious to see is if he is still in Storybrooke, did he age as well because he was originally outside, or did the curse kind of keep him in that time stasis as well?
Yeah, I guess that would sort of line up with, you know, what's going on with Henry and everything since he's an outsider too. So that's a really good question. What I'd like to know is, you know, where is he? Was he living as one of the members, you know, one of the citizens of Storybrooke, or was he locked up like Belle was?
I imagine he was locked up like Belle was, and I really want to go back and look because I know, like, in some of the scenes from old episodes when we would see the asylum area, there were other doors, and I almost feel like were there doors that maybe even had a name on them, or, you know, like, I don't own the DVD, so I can't go back and look, but I'm curious, like, if anybody who has the DVDs and is listening to this, if you know or remember, that'd be really cool to know.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing because I was like, oh, he has to be locked up because he would be allowed to leave Storybrooke if he could get out. So I don't think she would leave that to chance. Not that they could get back in, but I don't think he is free, shall we say.
Do you think she would have killed him?
I don't see what the point would have been, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why she would have. She has no reason to. She has no reason to keep him either, really, but she did. So, I don't know. Never know the motives of Regina.
She really was so all over the place with this. I mean, it was like, I really think that the reality of the curse unhinged her for this time period. Because, I mean, she was all over the place, like, angry, and then, you know, gonna make this happy little family, and then going crazy and sending her heart dog after him, and, like, all this stuff, and then she let Owen go, knowing that he knew all that he knew, which was really bizarre to me as well. I mean, it was definitely an act, born of a real, like, a true emotion. I felt like that was, like, one of the first times where she took a step back and thought of and looked at what she was actually doing to this person's life, and that maybe that's why she let him go, because she realized that she was being a little crazy. But it was so weird to me that she would let him go, knowing that he knew all of this stuff about Storybrooke and her and his dad.
Do you think that the curse had an effect on her after all? Because we know that, you know, Snow White, for instance, she was such the strong, powerful woman in the fairy tale world, and then Mary Margaret is very much the opposite of that. So do you think even though Regina retained her memories, is there any chance that the curse could have had some sort of effect on her? Or do you think this is actually how she really is, and now that she's just let her walls down, she's allowing, you know, these real emotions to come out?
I don't know. It's possible that she's become a little bit more emotional and a little bit more, I don't know, a little more crazy, if you will. Not quite as because in Fairy Tale Land, she was always very vindictive and very angry and very vengeful. But when we see her in this, you know, segment, she isn't like that. It's like she's kind of all over the place emotionally. Like, she doesn't know how to cope, is like the only way I can put it. So I think maybe it had some sort of effect on her. And it wasn't, and I think the big thing is, it wasn't what she expected. It wasn't, she wanted to be happy, and she's not happy. And she makes that very clear to Rumple and talks to Rumple about it. And so how does she deal with that? And how does that work for her? I guess maybe that's part of it. And part of what we're seeing is this, when you have an expectation and it's in your mind that it's going to be a certain way, and then it doesn't work out that way, it's really hard to find a balance, I think. And so for her, she had this expectation of what her happiness would be, and she doesn't have it. It's not what she wanted. And so how do you meet that expectation, you know, that's different from the expectation that you had?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that yeah, no, that's, yeah, that's like, that's kind of what I was thinking too, where just her realizing how different this is, and the fact that she can't just magic her way back, you know, like this is kind of a permanent deal. It's not something that she can just roll back the clock and go back on. And I think that the reality of the situation just kind of unhinges her for a bit. And that eventually maybe that's a part of why she becomes so hardened even towards Henry later on, is because she's just so like, this is what she's stuck with, and it makes her hard. That's the only way she can deal.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. I think that's a great point. So that was kind of the end of the flashback segment of Welcome to Storybrooke. And now we can kind of move in and talk about the real time, because I didn't want to get confused because there was so much going on in the one place. So looking at real-time Storybrooke and the storyline that was going on there, the first thing we see is a confrontation between Regina and Rumple, because Regina is very much aware of the fact that Rumple was behind Cora being killed, that he is the one who indeed sent Mary Margaret out there to take the candle, get the heart, and all of those things. What did you guys think of that moment? Because I thought Regina was rather forgiving of Rumple, considering everything that happened. And how she did accuse him and blame him, she didn't really hold him accountable the way I thought she would.
I think part of it is that she kind of understands the ilk. Like, she understands the stuff that Rumple is made of, and that he was just looking out for himself, like, to save his own life. So she can't really fault him for manipulating like he normally does in order to save his life. But that for Mary Margaret, for Snow White, to go against her very nature and manipulate her. And the fact, just the sole fact that Snow White manipulated Regina to killing her own mother, like, I feel like that's just such a blow to her ego, that she allowed herself to be manipulated by this little nothing girl that she can't stand, was just such a blow to her ego and something that she can't forgive.
That's exactly how I feel too, that, you know, she expected this out of Gold. I mean, Gold's done this a million times, you know, killed people and manipulated people, so it's not shocking. But for Mary Margaret to do that, I feel like it's more of a betrayal, because she just never saw it coming.
So basically we're looking at a double standard here. It's okay for Rumple, because, well, he does it all the time. So when you're bad, and that's, you know, another body, what, you know, what the heck. And then you have Mary Margaret, who's never done anything like this, who made the choice and now is going to pay for it forever from Regina, because that was the choice she made.
Right. Basically. Plus, Rumple was just trying to survive, you know? I mean, if Regina was in that situation, what, you know, she would have gone to any length to keep her own life. Whereas Mary Margaret, what she did was a very proactive sort of thing compared to Rumpelstiltskin, who that was sort of like a defense mechanism, you know, just manipulate Mary Margaret into doing this so that I can survive. Whereas Mary Margaret just did it, you know, literally to kill Cora.
But not unprovoked. Because the week before, Cora had killed off her nanny or her maid or whatever without reason. So where's the difference? Do you see what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Regina really isn't, I don't know. Like, I get her being angry. I understand it. You know, your mother's dead. You really thought you were going to get her back. You were used as the instrument of her death. All of that stuff. However, Regina isn't really stopping to think about all of the things that have encompassed what this feud is and why it is what it is.
Yeah, let's not, you know, like, toe the line here. I mean, Cora definitely had it coming. And, you know, whether or not Snow should have done it because of the type of person she is, I mean, Cora definitely had it coming.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Regina doesn't see it that way. And so what we see throughout the majority of the time in real-time Storybrooke is that Regina is just, she's crazy with vengeance. That is the only thing she can think about the entire time. Is how will she get back at Snow White? Who is she going to take out? How is she going to destroy her? How is she going to destroy them? How is she going to get Henry back? She doesn't even care if killing Snow White makes Henry angry. She will find a way to make Henry love her. And she finds a curse that will give her everything. And she has this big speech about how she wants everything. She wants it all. She wants, you know, she wants to have Henry's love, and she wants to destroy his other half of his family. She wants to have it all, her vengeance and Henry's love, and she's going to find a way to make it happen, and she's going to do it. And it's a little scary. There are moments where I was truly frightened of what Regina is capable of, because we are now back to a Regina that was in the fairy tale world that wanted to kill everybody and wipe everybody out. You know, which is a very different Regina than the one we've seen the last couple of weeks, or prior to Cora coming back, we saw a very different Regina. So Regina's now on this just horrible path of destruction, essentially. So what did you guys think about that Regina? I mean, she's so different from everything we've experienced thus far.
Yeah, it's definitely, it didn't surprise me because, again, I feel like right now everything is still really raw with her mother's death, and this was just one blow too many and to her pride. But I don't think that she's quite the Regina that she was, the Regina who cast this curse, the original curse that brought them to Storybrooke. I think that in the interactions that we saw with her and Henry, and then, you know, the way that the episode ended, that there is still that part of her that is good and that can do good. She still hates Snow and wants her vengeance against Snow, but I don't think that it's as bloodthirsty for the whole world as it was before. And so she's still going to be a force to be reckoned with and be, you know, the quote unquote villain. But I think that it's going to be to a lesser degree, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I was actually kind of surprised that she'd be willing to put that curse on Henry. And I think that after a while, she wouldn't be happy with what she did. Not just because she felt guilty, but because, you know, like we were saying before, she was unhappy when the original curse first was enacted because she didn't have any of those genuine reactions. Everybody was just sort of, you know, a robot. And I think if that would have happened to Henry, that she put this curse on him, forcing him to love her, that after a while she would realize, you know, this isn't the real deal, and what did I do? And, you know, I don't think she would have been happy with her decision there. And I think that she just wanted to make that, like you said, Jess, because, you know, everything was so raw after her mother had just died.
And it's different, you know, hearing all these other people tell you, if you do this, Henry won't love you. If you do this, Henry won't love you, yada, 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 yada. And then having Henry stand before you and say, no, I don't want this. I don't like this. Don't do this. And then, you know, because that's kind of how she's always been pulled back. You know, when she first got magic and she was going all crazy and Henry, like, said the same thing to her that she had said to her mother. And it was kind of like the slap in the face that she needed to get her on the right track. And now this is another case where Henry said the same thing that little boy Owen said. And it was the slap in the face that, oh, yeah, this isn't what I want. I want the real connection, not this fake, fabricated, magicked connection.
Yeah, I think those are all very good points. And I think, especially for Henry, I think we've heard him say so many times, don't do this, Mom. Look at me. This is how can you do this? How can you think that that's going to be okay? And I think every time that's what pulls Regina back. But my concern for Henry is there's going to be a time where he's not going to be enough. Because there's always comes that breaking point. And so what happens the one time where Henry's begging and pleading and hoping isn't enough to pull Regina back? That could be a very ugly day in the near future.
And it makes me wonder what would have happened if Henry had gone to New York City with Neil. You know, Regina, he was basically the one that reeled Regina in, so who knows what she would have done if he would have left.
Yeah, it could have been very, very ugly. There could have been a lot of destruction in Storybrooke. So let's see. So we talked about Regina and kind of her vengeance and her anger and how it all kind of filters through for everybody. We also see Gold, who is kind of playing it laid back and just kind of observing everything as it unfolds. And he goes to Charming and Snow and Emma and says, I'm warning you. I'm giving you a warning. Regina's coming for Snow. And Charming says, you owe her. You owe Snow White. She saved your life. She did this for you. You owe her a debt. And you should always pay your debts. And so Gold doesn't feel like he owes Snow White a debt, even though I think he knows he does. He's kind of playing it off like it's no big deal. He doesn't owe anybody anything. And I thought that was an interesting thing to see from Gold, kind of trying to play it cool and aloof, even though he knows deep down that had Snow White not done that for him, he would have died. What did you guys think about Gold in that respect regarding Snow and what she did for him?
I actually thought the opposite of that, that he, you know, by going there and warning her, that he did sort of pay off that debt. And I mean, obviously, that's not a very good trade. You know, she did save his life. That's kind of a big deal. But he could have talked his way out of doing anything else. Gold is very intelligent and he's very manipulative. He could have found a way to not help them if he didn't want to. But he did. He did help them, and he stayed there, and he protected Snow White, and I was really surprised, and this just kind of gives me high hopes for him that maybe he's learning his lessons, and he's realizing, you know, okay, these people are my family now, and, you know, I should stick with them and that sort of thing. So I hope this is sort of a change for Rumpelstiltskin.
I think, too, like, right now, he's really being pulled in the two directions of wanting family, wanting his son back and this family that he's always kind of longed for, but the fear of losing his power with that prophecy regarding Henry. You know, like, when Emma was like, what if Regina hurt, you know, does this curse and it affects your grandson? And he's like, well, there are casualties of war. And so he's just got these two, like, parts inside of him that are just battling so much. And so it's just kind of like when they are able to pull on his good nature and pull on it, that's why he was like, you know, it was the one that wants this family that allowed him to stay there and protect Snow. But it was the one that wants to just let Henry die so that this prophecy isn't fulfilled that kind of kept him with that just real, like, just that attitude that he had of just, you know, whatever, I'm doing the bare minimum, like, it's no big deal attitude that he had the whole time. And so he's just kind of torn.
Yeah, I don't know. It Rumpel is always such a big puzzle to me because he has his own motives, and yet he does have good motives and intentions sometimes. But I think the key is he always tries to hide when he's trying to be good, because he doesn't want anyone to know that he's capable of good. At least that's the way I see it. I think there's something mm-hmm. about him that, because then if there's an ounce of good and you see it, you're going to want to capitalize on it. So he doesn't want to lead you to believe that he's even capable of that.
He doesn't want to be seen as weak.
Right. And for him, magic and power and almost cruelty, in a sense, is what's important, is what is needed to survive in the world that he exists in. So I think it's just he's such an interesting, complex character. So let's talk about Henry, because there was a lot of Henry in this episode at varying degrees. We have, you know, Henry being angry at everybody and saying, "Stop it, you're lying to me," all the time to every. That's like his new favorite line. "You're lying to me. I know you're lying to me." And I'm like, "All right, dude, Henry, we get it. You're like the other human lie detector in the room. It's cool. But yes, kid, they're lying to you, but they're doing it to protect you." And Henry doesn't see the fine line between that, because yes, he is a child, but he almost is becoming a little bit of a petulant child where,
Yeah,
it's getting a little old, kid. Let's go.
All episode, I was like, will one of the like 50 adults in charge of him please put his butt in time out and like take away all of his toys or something? Like, whatever it is, because this is ridiculous.
Yeah, he does not get to be in charge. He's only 12. So I guess, I don't know, like, I like Henry as a character, but in this particular episode, I felt like it was a little much with the whining and the, "You're lying to me," and the, I mean, I get it. His family's being torn apart. It's hard, but I don't know. It was a little much for me this episode. So a couple of interesting points on Henry's story arc was that he wants to take a stance against magic. He wants to get rid of it. He wants it gone. And it's the only way he can see to save everyone in his family, including Regina. And so he has this idea that he's going to use the dynamite from the mines where the dwarves work and blow up the well, because the well is what represents magic to him. So he has that idea. And while he's in the woods running around, he runs into Greg. And Greg, like, you know, takes a little picture of his tag on his thing so that he can call Regina and fill, you know, Regina in on everything. Greg is incredibly manipulative and scary in his own right. But we'll get to Greg in a moment. That's a different petulant child we'll be talking about. So then we have that aspect of it. And that's where he runs into Regina at the well. And he has this big speech about all of you need to stop fighting, and he gets Regina to turn it around. But my favorite part of Henry's story arc this episode is when he goes and sits with Neil at the diner, and Neil buys him this sundae with extra everything, and Henry's like, "Dude, you're trying too hard. Like, really?" And so Neil thinks he's being super dad and gets Henry to agree to move to New York with him, so he can be safe. And Super Dad is so super that he misses the fact that Henry has run and escaped through the bathroom window, backpack and all. I think my favorite line of the entire episode is when Emma's like, "You're kidding me?" She's like, "You fell for that? He's your son. He's running." And then the two of them get up and go. Like, that moment right there, by far, was one of my favorites the entire episode. There was just, it was a moment for Neil and Emma, and it was fun, and it was like, "Oh, Neil, you really thought you were that good? Like, you've been on the job all of 2 days."
It was hilarious, and my favorite part about the whole thing was how, like, incredulous Emma was that Neil fell for that, when she was the exact same way when she first came to Storybrooke. Like, Henry totally pulled the wool over her eyes so many times, and so it's just so funny to me.
Yeah, it's like this big growing experience for all of them. They're just like, how are we supposed to be parents? Like, we were never good at being adults ourselves. Now we're supposed to take care of a 12-year-old who's got, you know, a mind of his own. So I think it's really funny watching the two of them try to parent. I think it's so interesting in that whole dynamic of all of it. not only discovering who they are, but discovering who they are as parents. And I think it's a really fun thing, and I hope we get to see more of that from them. So yeah, Henry's story arc was, like I said, it was interesting. It was, you know, again, it's Henry against the magic. And the one thing I will say that I found a little bit lacking was Neil not as willing to help Henry with the destruction of magic. Because for Neil, it's the same exact thing that he went through as a child. So why he didn't connect more with Henry's desire to be rid of magic was a little puzzling to me.
I thought the same thing. I so thought that Neil was going to be like, you're right, that's what I want. Well, together, you and I will figure out a way to do this and we'll figure it out. But I don't know, it was weird.
Do you think there is a way to destroy the magic, though? I mean, I'm sure there is. There's probably some, you know, potion or curse or something that will do that. But, I mean, I don't think blowing up the well is going to stop all the magic in Storybrooke. So maybe Neil just knew that it wasn't going to be that easy, and he was more concerned with just keeping Henry safe.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But, like, I felt like he didn't even hear him out. Like, when they were talking about it, Neil could have at least acknowledged that, yes, magic is really hard, and he maybe could have shared a little bit with him about Rumple and how magic affected his life, and there was no, like, bonding. Like, I felt that was the perfect moment for Neil and Henry to bond, and it was totally, like, ignored. Because it's the one thing that they can both understand and bond over without having to know each other that well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe it was just, like Karen was saying, that sense of urgency. Like, maybe he was thinking, just get him to New York and then we can talk about it, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I felt like it was a missed opportunity in a sense.
Hopefully that's something they'll bring up later, though, because that's a really good point that basically, you know, Henry has his mom and Neil has his dad, and they both, you know, Regina and Rumple are so similar to each other, not wanting to give in to love and, you know, give up magic, that, you know, I really would like to see Neil and Henry bond over that sort of thing.
Right, and I think it's such an easy topic for them to bond over, because they have so many things in common with it, like you said, so hopefully that'll be a moment we see in the future. So let's take a moment, because we didn't talk about this earlier in the flashback section, and I just realized that, but okay, at what point did you guys know that Owen was Greg and Greg was Owen?
I think for me it was when he escaped Storybrooke, when Regina let him go, and I was sort of like, oh, okay, this all makes sense now. Because up until that point, I wasn't really sure what was going to happen to the two of them, if she was going to force them to stay and maybe do something with their memories or something like that. But as soon as he escaped, I was like, yeah, this is what's going on. So I figured it out, not like super early, but definitely before they had the whole big reveal with the thing on his keychain.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when I figured it out, but I remember thinking that from, like, pretty much as soon as the curse happened and they were in Storybrooke, that they were somehow connected to Greg. But I didn't put it together that Owen and Greg were the same until, I want to say, when Regina started trying to keep Owen with her. Like when she started to really hardcore go after keeping him there.
Yeah. I had the sneaking suspicion that Owen was Greg kind of early on. If you guys look at the document, you can see I, like, typed it in. And then at the end, I'm like, confirmed. Because I was like, oh, yeah, there it is. But, like, I don't know. There was something about that that made me really think that they were, because, again, he wasn't surprised by the magic. And so I think that kind of is what tipped me off. And, like, as a little boy, if you see magic and then as an adult you see magic again, it's no longer shocking to you. You've seen it before. You no longer feel like when you were little you were crazy for thinking it. And so, I don't know. There was something about that kind of tipped it off that made me feel like he was one and the same. And yeah, the age difference was right. If you think about it, he is fully grown now. And if you...
It makes...
Yeah.
it makes me even more curious who her is.
Yes, like, exactly.
Like, once, you know, I started to think, like, oh, they're the same person. The whole time I was like, okay, is there any mention of a woman? Is there any mention of a female? Who is her?
No, because his mom is dead, so it's not that her. Like, what other kind of her could there be? Well,
exactly.
I know. Still no luck on her. There was no hinting about who her was, unfortunately. So I guess the last thing in this episode for the episode we just watched to talk about is Mary Margaret. The lump of human being that was Mary Margaret this entire episode. I was so bothered by this. It drove me batty to have her just laying on the bed, having them talk around her and having her not even acknowledge anything that they were saying. Like, it was just the most absurd thing ever. It was like Snow when she took the potion or whatever, or when she thought that Charming was dead back in Fairy Tale World, and she just laid around the dwarves hot forever. Like, that's kind of what it reminded me of, but this was, like, 10 times worse. Like, I didn't get it.
I really wanted somebody to go over there and smack her and be like, okay, it's over. Get past it. Get up off your butt and figure out a way to stop this. Damage control, like, stop moping.
I have to say that I'm not super surprised that it had that sort of effect on her, just given the type of person that she is, but I totally agree that it was really annoying just to have her laying around like that. And, you know, it's not like she killed an innocent person. It's not like she killed, you know, Henry or Emma or something like this. This was Cora. Like I said before, she kind of had it coming. And I was most surprised, I think, by the ending there when she was so willing to give up everything. I mean, she was going to let Regina kill her. And just think about what that would have done to David, to Henry, to Emma, to all these people in her life. I'm just really shocked that she would have gone that far to pay that debt, to get rid of her guilt.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, because before they remembered who they were. You know, we complained a lot about Mary Margaret being so weak compared to Snow White. And then we've had them merge together. And, it you know, for so long now, we've been used to the strength of Snow White being back in Mary Margaret and seeing the Snow who has hits and takes all these knocks but rallies back up. And it just felt like this was the weak Mary Margaret times 10. And it didn't make sense. Like, I understood her having a hard time dealing with this and feeling guilt, but just the severity of her self-loathing and just wallowing, it just surprised me.
Yeah, I think the suicidal Snow was what surprised me the most. To walk up and knock on Regina's door and be like, okay, you know, let's end this. If you kill me, it's over. Well, it never would have been over if Regina had killed her, because Charming and Emma never would have let it go. Do you know what I mean? That wouldn't have resolved anything.
Right.
So even though in her mind she thinks that it ends it, it never would have ended it, because the others wouldn't have let it go, no matter what. So it was, you know, kind of a useless attempt at trying to save things, because it never would have worked. So the other thing that happens in this is that Cora decides to take Snow's heart. And when she does, she sees this little cloud of blackness into it. And she says, you've darkened your heart. And once you do that, the darkness will consume you and it never goes back. So why wasn't anyone else's heart who's been evil black? Was my right? Big thing. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. If that's the case, then how come that, like, Regina's heart doesn't look like coal by now? Or not Regina, or Cora's heart doesn't look like coal by now. Like, there's been so many others that it didn't make sense to me.
The thing I was thinking with that was that Cora's heart hasn't been in her body for a really long time, and that perhaps that has something to do with it. I mean, obviously, they're still connected in some way, so you would think that, you know, you crush the heart, somebody dies, that whatever that person does, you know, while they're still alive would affect the heart too, but maybe it just doesn't work like that because they're not physically connected. You know, that the fact that Cora's heart wasn't in her body since that one day when she took it out instead of killing the king, that maybe that's why it's not black. That might not be very good reasoning, but that's the only one that I could come up with.
Right, but yeah, I had thought about that too. But even so, like, when she pulled her own heart from herself, like, she was not a good person.
But she hadn't killed anybody, right? She hadn't actually murdered anybody at that point?
I guess. Is it like the whole, like, how you turn a Horcrux, you rip the soul in two by murder, so you make a black hole in your heart by killing someone? Like,
but technically, Snow White didn't kill anyone either.
Oh, that's true.
So again, are we looking at a plot hole? Are we looking at an oopsie? Like, what? Like, I don't know. It was just a weird thing.
Well, and Regina made it sound like the blackness would continue to spread until it took over her heart, which makes it seem like, you know, it's not just murder. Like, it's true darkness and evil that seeps in and takes over. So if Rumpel were to pull out Regina's heart, or Regina were to pull out Rumpel's heart, what would theirs look like?
Yeah, I know. That's the weird part, is that it doesn't... Again, it's not part of the continuous story that we know so far, so it's a little questionable. Like, I don't get it. You know, is Regina lying and trying to put that doubt in Snow White's mind? Because even if your heart does have a little bit of darkness to it because you've made a mistake, does it consume it? Why would it consume it? It only consumes it if you let it, you know, rationally speaking. So is that just Regina's way of trying to make Snow White feel the guilt and carry that guilt and pain and agony with her forever? Or to make her fear who she will become, even though she won't technically change? Is this Regina's way of kind of utilizing that fear and controlling Snow White in a sense?
Yeah, I wondered the same thing, if she somehow like made it almost even like she magically put an optical illusion there of the black spot so she could tell Snow this lie.
I don't know. Again, it just doesn't seem like it fits the continuity of the story we already know. So I'm really curious to see how, if that's an accurate thing, if, you know, your heart can become filled with darkness and it shows when they pull your heart out, or if that's something that Regina is using to manipulate Snow White.
I'm curious to see where Snow White is going to go from here, because, you know, just say that it is a real thing, that the spot in there will consume her heart eventually. Like, are we looking at, you know, an evil Snow White, and is there a way that, you know, she could ever come back from that? Is this going to be a whole possible plot line in the future? I think that would be an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, I think, again, that's one of those things I think that will play out through at least the end of this season, because we're looking at Snow White kind of take on a different form of herself now. Now that she's been willing to kill, I think we're going to see the destruction of Snow White as we've grown to know her, and maybe the reconstruction of her as she changes who she is as a character. Okay, so that's the end of the discussion for Welcome to Storybrooke. We also have next week's episode, which is kind of going to be really interesting, I think. And it's called Selfless, Brave, and True. And I looked everywhere and I couldn't really find a synopsis for it, but here are the things we do know. We know that Neil's fiance is coming to Storybrooke. And from what we gather, she doesn't know who he is. I mean, we see Emma ask Neil the question, and Neil doesn't answer right away, so we don't know what his answer is, but you kind of get the impression that she has no idea. So she's walking into this really tumultuous situation in Storybrooke. She's going to find out about, because she doesn't know about Henry either. So we're kind of I'm hoping at least that this is what this episode is all about her getting to know about Emma, about Henry, to see who she and what she really knows. And because I kind of get the feeling that she knows more than what she's letting on. But that's just me. So what do you guys...
Me too.
Yeah, we're all like, yes, she's her.
She just seems kind of... That's what I was thinking. She seems shady. Like, I don't trust her.
Yeah, I don't trust her either. And yeah, the title of the episode has me intrigued as well. That it's called Selfless, Brave, and True. Like, I don't know. That just seems interesting to me. And, oh, did you guys see at the end of the preview that we finally are going to find out where on Earth August has been?
I did notice that, yes.
And wasn't he, like, CGI at the end there?
He looked a little wooden still.
It looked like his limbs were still wooden, but his face was normal or something. Like, maybe he's still converting.
I hope he goes back to cute August. I don't really like the wooden boy August.
Oh, boy. So it'll be nice to see all this August and what he's been up to and why he ran away. I'm very curious about that part of it.
All right, our first piece of listener feedback is from Ning, and they say, I was re-listening to the Rufio Rufio episode and had a thought regarding Neil/Bay. In the episode Manhattan, Neil told Emma that our world wasn't the first one he came to after leaving Rumble, and that if it had been, he would have been much older. Emma, of course, doesn't know how old Neil is supposed to be, but shouldn't Rumple know? Based on my estimate, Neil and Rumple last saw each other at least 50 years ago. Why did Rumple not question the fact that Neil looks much younger than he should be, and why did Rumple never seem to consider the fact that his son could have been dead before actually meeting him? I mean, I would really like to hear your opinions on this. That's a really good question. I don't know why Rumple didn't question how old Neil was.
Well, he's a seer, so he can see.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So maybe he saw this coming and maybe he knows where Bay was before.
Well, he had to use the globe, the special globe, to find Bay. But I think part of it is that he's a seer, so he had some idea of his existence still, knowing that they would meet again in the future kind of thing. I think that, because he always knew he needed the curse, he needed to come to our world. Like, he knew the things he needed to do to get his son back again. So right, I think that he might have had some knowledge to how old and stuff, or that he would at least, at the very least, still be alive. And when you come from a magical land, do you really question age? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess not.
That is a really interesting question, though.
Yeah, it is a really good question, but...
Yeah, like, I wonder how much Rumple knows, if he just, all he knew was that he would be alive and at a certain age, or if he knows all the details. Another bit of feedback we got comes from Cynthia, who said, just saw last night's episode, and I definitely think there's something to the theory that her is Neil's fiance, especially since she looked so shady in the trailer for next week's episode. It also wraps up the Neil-Emma love story quite well if she turns out to be evil, using Neil to get to Storybrooke. Can't quite think of who she could be. Do you think she's going to be a fairy tale character? I don't remember a female African-American Disney antagonist, and I've noticed that they tend to stick pretty close to how the characters look like in Disney movies. They only stray from it when it's a non-Disney fairy tale, example, Jack Jacqueline. The only Disney character I can think of is Tiana, or that could be totally off. Maybe she's Greg Owen's fiance and pretending to be in a relationship with Neil to find out when Storybrooke's curse would lift. Do you think Greg Owen is mainly gathering evidence on Regina so he can bargain for his father? I noticed he's only been filming her and no one else. And who else caught that tip of the hat to Aladdin when Emma mentions the three limitations of magic? Wow, there's a lot in there. all really good points, though. I don't know if if the fiance is going to, we kind of had this discussion the other week about whether or not we thought Neil's fiance would be a Disney character or just a normal person, because you're right. They do tend to stick with the appearances of the characters from the movies. So I don't know. I feel like they're going to, that she's not going to be a fairy tale character just because they haven't really done that yet. With the exception, of course, of Owen, now that we know. But that's interesting to think that she does somehow, is the her and connected to Greg Owen. What do you guys think? I mean, we kind of talked about that a little bit.
I kind of like the idea that maybe she's, like, Greg's fiance. Well, I mean, that'd be kind of weird for him to put her in his phone as her. But I definitely, from the trailer and the voiceovers and how they, you know, put the images up against those certain words, that Greg definitely knows who she is and that they have some sort of connection. I have no idea what that connection could be, but yeah, like I said, shady.
What if she's like a PI or like an undercover person that he hired to get to Neil?
That's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, with such limited information, it's so hard to like guess. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've met her for 2.2 seconds, and we know that she's Neil's fiance. Mm-hmm. So there's such limited information. Clearly, after next week, we'll have a much better picture of her, but she could be anybody. I mean, she doesn't have to be a Disney character or from Fairytale Land. We have other worlds that we have yet to explore. She could be from another
Very
world.
True.
She could be the Wicked Witch of the West. You know what I mean? Like, we have no idea.
I want her to be evil.
I love it. Karen's like, I just want her to be bad.
I just love the bald declaration. I love it. Oh, and also good catch on the Aladdin reference.
Yeah, the Cynthia. Aladdin reference was so cute. Loved it.
I think so.
So that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Onceable. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, you can contact us via email at onceable@hypeable.com. On Twitter at Once Upon News. And of course, you can leave comments on any of the podcast posts or regular Once Upon a Time posts. We check them frequently. So thank you guys for listening. And I'm Jen.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.